Well, purchasing a cup of coffee from the booth at my neighborhood farmer's market, I noticed that the proprietors, a husband and wife team of smiling seniors, were also selling world peace. After drinking that cup of coffee and sampling my way through the market, I got to wondering just how fair is fair trade.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 691st edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Ushuaia. You are tuned in as we stream along on the radio page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are, and well, wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Folks, the proprietors of the Farmer's Market coffee booth didn't exactly come out and say they were selling world peace, but you just knew there was something in that cup of coffee besides the Nicaraguan coffee. The photos of Central American coffee plantations, alluring jungle fauna, and steaming volcanoes compelled me to stop. And so I introduced myself to Bert and Lois Muley. Bert and Lois told me how a couple of suitcases filled with Nicaraguan coffee beans were used to build a bridge between two island communities worlds apart. But that's just the beginning of the story. With Nicaraguan caffeine coursing through my veins, I got to thinking about how food might be used to bring peace where politics fail. But before I imagine myself too far down that road, I simply must pause to ask, how fair is fair trade coffee? And who better to ask than the people who started me off down that road in the first place, Bert and Lois Muley from Three Americas. Bert, good morning.
Good morning.
Lois, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
So good to have you aboard. And so good that you're at my local farmer's market so that after my Food Chain Radio Show, I can go to the farmer's market and get a lift from you two, and it's a lot of fun. What is Three Americas?
Well, Lois has a copy of the mission statement.
No, you can't read it. You have to see it.
Three Americas is North, Central, and South America. And people tend to look at North and South America, but forget about
what's in the middle.
Important countries in between. Mm-hmm. And our history is very much connected with the history of Central America.
Good. And Bert, you're very much connected with Nicaragua. So tell us a little bit about the geography of Nicaragua, because it always seemed like a fascinating geography to me, with your steaming volcanoes and your jungle fauna and whatnot.
It's a rather mountainous country with valleys and coastal plains that are conducive to agriculture. And there you find a split right down the middle from Honduras to Costa Rica by a division such as our Great Divide, mm-hmm. and right. Everything from to the east flows to the Caribbean, and everything to the west flows to the Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. And in that part that flows to the Pacific Ocean, you have 90% of the population, and you have 90% of the farming. You have the...
Is that because that's the weather side, the water side?
Well, they're both water sides, and they both empty into the two oceans. Mm-hmm. But on the east side, there's only 10% of the population is totally undeveloped, except the communities of New Guinea and Blue Fields and... very small communities, and you find a much different culture and population than you would find over on the mestizo side, which where 90% of the population live and where agriculture is so important.
Well, good. Hey, also with us today, by golly, we have from Bainbridge Island, we have Dana Quitsland, who is with... I get that right, Dana?
Yes.
Dana's with the Bainbridge Ometepe Sister Island Association. Welcome to the Food Chain. Are you there?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yep. Okay, I gotcha. Bainbridge Island. So what is the Bainbridge Ometepe Sister Island Association?
It's primarily a friendship association. The people who started this relationship 24 years ago felt that it was an important part of our life here on Bainbridge, that we were an island surrounded by water, and wanted to have a sister island that was in a similar situation, but in a very different country and culture.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the Nicaraguan connection.
Good enough. And let's see, you're a friendship association. We always ask who pays the way.
Who pays the way?
Yeah, you get grants from the government, Ford Foundation.
We have had some foundation grants, nothing too splashy. Most of what pays the way are individuals who sponsor scholarships or support us in other ways, but the broadest participation is people who buy the coffee that we import from our sister island.
Good, and that's where we'll be heading. Bert gave us a pretty good thumbnail of Nicaragua. Can you give us a thumbnail of what Ometepe Island is like?
Yes. It's a large island. It sits in the very large Lake Nicaragua, or Cocibolca, is its local name, which at one time was considered as an alternative route to the Panama Canal before the Panama Canal was built.
Oh.
Ometepe, people who know Hawaii, is a little bit like Maui in that it consists of two large volcanoes, mm-hmm, with an isthmus between. It has a population of something like 35,000 people.
Well, those of us who've been to Maui can sure picture that pretty good, I'll tell you. So, must be a beautiful island then.
It is beautiful.
And they grow the coffee upcountry then, on the slopes of the
volcano? They do, primarily on the slopes of the volcanoes, in particular the Madeiras, which is the smaller and older of the two volcanoes, and has a bit of cloud forest,
mm-hmm,
environment.
Good. Well, very much like Haleakala then.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to get down to some coffee questions here, if I might, before we get into the real business of what we're here for today, because there are a lot of things about coffee that I find interesting. One of them is, why is Seattle such a world epicenter for coffee consumption? I mean, they grow it in the tropics and they drink it in Seattle. Why is that, Dana?
I don't really have a satisfactory answer to that. It does seem to go with our high-tech focus, because we're all jazzed up on coffee. What first, I couldn't say. I think
the reason is that
beverage year-round, and that may be part of it.
Okay, good. I think we lost a connection there, so I'm not sure if it's your phones or ours, but we'll try to work that through. Let's see, with respect to coffee, we don't just drink coffee. We drink organic coffee that's shade and bird-friendly coffee and fair trade, right?
That's correct.
What are all of those things? What do you mean organic? Well, we all kind of know what organic is. You're not running around spraying pesticides on the coffee plants, right?
That's correct.
Okay, fair enough. But what about this shade-grown bird-friendly stuff? What does that mean?
It means that the coffee is grown in a natural environment with trees that produce shade, which may affect the quality of the coffee, but more importantly, it provides a habitat for everything from howler monkeys to songbirds, many of which are familiar to us in North America because they winter in Central America.
Ah.
So for folks like Audubon, shade grown is probably the most important aspect of the coffee that they buy.
So it may or may not have something to do with the quality of coffee, but it has everything to do with the quality of environment then.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So when people say, I'll take mine shade-grown or bird-friendly, what we're talking about is some very friendly cultivation practices with respect to the earth. The big one, of course, fair trade. What the heck do you mean by fair trade?
It means that the people who grow the coffee have an opportunity to make a decent living doing it. And
maybe I should get a job growing coffee. Well, fair trade coffee.
as one of my friends in the association says, agriculture is a very difficult way to make a living. So you might want to think twice about that before you give up your day job.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break,
okay.
Dana. But when we come back, we'll pick up fair trade with Dana Quitsland, who is with the Bainbridge Ometepe Sister Island Association, with Bert and Lois Muley from Three Americas, and with you. This is the Food Chain, and you are invited to participate. Questions about coffee, questions about how food can be used to build bridges between people and bring people together where politics can't. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson here. Pick up your phones and join us. It's the Food Chain radio program. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back. Hey, the question of the day is, can food be used to build bridges between people and bring them together where in situations where politics fail? And today we're talking with a very specific example of how that just might be true with respect to a little island off the coast of Nicaragua, Ometepe Island, and Bainbridge Island up in Seattle. And how the relationship or how the bridge of food that was built between those two islands brought them together, but that's just the beginning of the story. With us today, we have Bert and Lois Muley from Three Americas Incorporated and also Dana Quitsland, Bainbridge Ometepe Sister Island Association. There has to be some magic here and to make all of this work. And I suspect the magic has something to do with this whole notion of fair trade. Dana, am I right?
Well, it's certainly an important part of it, yeah.
Well, tell us about fair trade and how fair trade works.
Well, essentially fair trade is a mechanism by which consumers opt to possibly pay more for something imported from another part of the world, but with the understanding that they are paying the people who grow that product a decent enough to make a decent living.
So essentially, it's a way of taking some surplus in revenue from one place and moving it to another place outside of the government.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Now, who decides what's a fair price?
That's an excellent question, and I'll try to give you a short answer. There are international standards. There's a fair trade labeling organization, but what they can do is develop, in effect, what they call a floor price, the lowest price that you should ever pay to a producer for a given product.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, our focus today is on coffee. Fortunately, because of the close relationship that we have with the people who grow our coffee on Ometepe, we're able to... We basically pay more than that floor price in a couple of ways. We pay premiums for organic shade-grown coffee and for the fact that the coffee is grown by a cooperative, but we have also updated and increased our prices as we felt it was necessary to allow folks to make a decent living.
Mm-hmm.
There are also some people who are hired on a more of a day labor basis, who are not part of the growing cooperative but are laborers, and we want to make sure that there's enough money in the mix to pay those folks a decent wage.
Mm-hmm. So the floor for fair trade coffee, is, as I see it, is $1.26 a pound.
Uh-huh.
And the Ometepe Bainbridge Sister Association is paying $1.61 a pound, which is a substantial, boy, that's a big hit there. That's almost, what, 30% more?
Yes, and that's the combination of the premiums that I mentioned, which mm-hmm. are also part of the whole fair trade picture. But then the additional premium that we've added, just by looking at the economics of growing coffee specifically on Ometepe, in the relatively small farms in which most of it's produced, we're actually paying $2 a pound for green coffee, and
Ooh.
We're contemplating a possible increase above that.
Now, how much more does this cost the consumer for a cup of coffee?
Well, we have a particular advantage because while we do pay to roast the coffee, and of course we have to pay for bags, all of the work that's done, my work as treasurer and handling all the coffee invoices, our coffee coordinator, and all the volunteers who come in every week to package up the coffee after it's roasted, that's all volunteer. So we can have a very a profitable coffee crop and sell it for less than just about any other specialty coffee you're likely to see looking down the shelf.
This reminds me of my Lions Club. We sell Christmas trees, and we get a lot of free labor, which makes a lot of money for the club. And it's really that's really a big part of the secret. Bert, did you have a comment?
Yes. We also deal with Cafe Etico, which is a project of Co-Developing Canada, which also works in concert with Bainbridge Island.
Mm-hmm.
Through the two, our coffee will be combined on a container ship. That container ship might go to Colombia before it gets up to British Columbia, where it is then the brokerage fees and whatnot. And Co-Development Canada, I already got my bill from
right.
them. They're paying $1.91, and our cooperative, which consists of 17 cooperatives in Matagalpa for our Pancasan coffee, which is another Nicaraguan coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So this way you see where the mainland and the Owozo comes together with Ometepe, then on a ship, and then through Bainbridge Island, it eventually gets mm-hmm. on an Oak Harbor truck and comes down to Watsonville. And there it is deposited in the Santa Cruz City, Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company's mm-hmm. facility, where without whose support we would not be at our farmers.
The Three Americas would be.
Three Americas Incorporated
okay.
now has Nicaraguan coffee plus fair traded coffee in four other blends or flavors mm. or types of coffee, even Ethiopia, which Harry Belafonte helped us get mm-hmm. over in Africa.
Well, let me pick this up in just a minute, because this is a wonderful description of the bridges that are being built. But I want to go back to this fair trade notion, because that seems to be where the magic is here, where the real money is in this notion of fair trade, and then the notion that a cooperative picks this up. So essentially what is happening here is that because consumers are willing to pay a little bit extra, not much extra perhaps, and because there are so many volunteers involved, that there is a lot of excess, not excess, there's never excess, but because there is a surplus of revenue coming in, then we can take this revenue and do things with it that otherwise we would never be able to do. Fair enough, Dana?
Yes, that's fine.
That's about what we're up to then. Good. Let's see. So, well, you guys are up there making $40,000 a year in profits.
Not quite that.
Not quite that? Up there somewhere?
2023 last year.
Mm-hmm. That's a chunk of change. So this provides a significant impetus then for a lot of bridge building. And I guess that's where we want to go next, is the whole notion of how we use this surplus of revenue and what we use with it and where we take it. Which is amazing when you think about it, because what we're doing here is we're eliminating business people, are we not? I mean, we're eliminating... There would be a business here to do this if there were not the Bainbridge... Ometepe sister island arrangement. Is that correct?
Well, ours is an alternative structure. There certainly are businesses that do fair trade. You can buy fair trade coffee from Starbucks.
Right, right.
I agree. It's cooperative with the businesses here in Santa Cruz. We sell our coffee also to Shoppers Corner, a mm-hmm. market that's very popular, a high-end market. And we also... cooperate with mm-hmm. Santa Cruz Roasting Company.
Well, are you guys nonprofit too? Do you? What do you?
We're
do?
Nonprofit.
I put the label on every one of our bags. Free.
So this is all volunteer, isn't
Expert
it? This is
labeler
this
here.
Is volunteer.
I weigh it out every week.
It really, is like the Lions Club, where we're hauling Christmas trees over our back to sell them to people who really enjoy them, so we can
That's
take
right.
the profits that otherwise would be made someplace else. And we donate them, take that money, and we try to do good with it and try to build bridges. So when we get back from this coming break, I'd like to talk about the building of bridges, using food to build bridges between people, to bring people together in ways that politics and government and wars and peace treaties and all that stuff doesn't do. So this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson here. Hey, we're having a little fun with coffee. Maybe had a little bit too much myself. Who knows? We're with Bert and Lois Muley from Three Americas, and we're with Dana Quitsland, who is with the Bainbridge Ometepe Sister Island Association, and you. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Grab yourself a cup of coffee and stay tuned. What do you think? Can food be used to build the bridges that will bring people together in ways that government can't? Well, we're playing with that notion today. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about how coffee has been used to bring Bainbridge Island in the Pacific Northwest together with Ometepe Island in Nicaragua, and through the building of that bridge, the building of a lot of other bridges as well. This is Food Chain, as I said. We're with Bert and Lois Muley, Three Americas Incorporated, here in Santa Cruz, California. Dana Quitsland, Treasurer, Bainbridge Ometepe Sister Island Association up there in Bainbridge Island. And Dana, what's the difference between Bainbridge and Ometepe? Have you seen any similarities there? Are they a lot like?
Well, they're very different, I would say. I think the contrast would strike you more than the similarities. Right off. Bainbridge, although it wasn't that way when I was growing up here, has become a relatively affluent community.
Mm-hmm.
Ometepe is, like most of Nicaragua, relatively poor and has a lot of subsistence agriculture. No real industrial base. We have that in common.
But what you really have in common is coffee. They grow it and you drink it, right?
Well, we certainly have that, although this started as a people-to-people relationship before the coffee became an important part of it.
Let's talk about that, how this all started. How did it all start, anyway?
Well, a friend of ours, through a group of peace activists, if you will, back in the 80s, they got together and selected Nicaragua, and we chipped in to send Kim Esterberg there, and he went to the sister city.
As I understand it, a whole bunch of people got together and pitched in $10.
That was for the first bunch of coffee. It was.
Oh, okay. So you. Bought
I think it was a little more than $10 for Kim's airfare, but it was. Uh-huh. You know, it was a lot of people sharing a relatively small tab in any case. And Kim went to the sister city office in Managua and explained that we wanted a sister island. And he was told that he could go and visit Ometepe and announce himself as a new sister islander. And it started off very small, but 2 years later, he was back with a delegation, and they traveled around the island, met a lot of people. For many of them, including my wife, started learning Spanish. And then 3 years later, this was 91, after the government had changed, a medical delegation was visiting to help with some of the medical problems that were not being treated on the south end of the island. And they brought back 70-pound suitcases full of green coffee, because one of the things that the government change meant was that the coffee growers no longer had government assistance to market their coffee, and because they were campesinos who had worked that farm when it was owned by the Somoza family, they had no worldwide marketing expertise.
Right.
And so, as it turned out, this Bainbridge relationship helped make it possible for them to hold on to their land.
So there's like eight people that go down to Ometepe Island in Nicaragua with suitcases, and they throw the clothes out of the suitcases and fill them up with coffee beans.
Well, the suitcases on the southbound trip were probably carrying a combination of school and medical supplies.
Right,
but
right.
Yes, that's essentially
that's
right.
That's
this was a one-time thing, and once we found that the coffee was something that we could sell here, the next shipment was in a container.
Uh-huh.
And we shipped coffee from there to here once a year ever since.
Huh.
It's this year we'll get, hopefully within the next month, about 15,000 pounds that Bainbridge Ometepe will roast. And then Three Americas will get a few sacks of coffee, and a big chunk of the coffee will go to another sister island relationship up in Canada. The Gulf Islands Friendship Association.
So, Bert, let's pick up your story here, too. You're down in Nicaragua establishing a sister city relationship, too, right?
Yeah, I was on the sister city committee after I was mayor and made my first trip of Santa Cruz.
We should note, of course, that we're talking with the former mayor of Santa Cruz, California, Bert Muley. And in that position, you went down to work with a sister city relationship.
After I got off city council in 1981... I had already been very interested in what they were doing down there, and we were invited by our developing world from Saratoga, Vic and Barbie Ulmer, to join them where there was a revolution going on in Cuba. And Alexander Haig put a stop to that. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, they said, well, why don't you go down to Nicaragua with something happening down there? And Lois and I had already committed ourselves to Spanish in Guadalajara for the summer. And they said, well, we'll stop in Guadalajara. You join us there. And so that's how we got started in our first trip to Nicaragua in 1981.
So did you find some coffee beans?
Well, it was there, the person-to-person. No, coffee wasn't in her mind at that time. Uh-huh. But the workers who had been in the coffee, who had been hung from helicopters and dropped in the ocean by Somoza, they were the ones that we were associating with. And also I met Sergio Ramirez, the coming vice president under Ortega in the revolution with the Sandinista. And it was there we found just what the people were really faced with. And it had to do with land reform, mm-hmm. which had to do with economics and education, and all the kids were sent to the mountains from the schools to educate the illiterate people, and brought the level of language up to a fourth grade level.
How did you pick up the relationship then with the Bainbridge Island folks?
Well, then on the Sister City Committee, we suggested, I became very much involved as an urban and regional planner, mm-hmm. with a planning function down in Nicaragua. And a person who was educated at Catholic University, a Bolivian, who had been there during the Somoza regime but had left and saw what they were doing, he went to Mexico. He came back when the Sandinistas overthrew Somoza. We became very good friends. And I, as a planner down there, then It was on those missions. You know, I did about 25, 26 trips there subsequently. I did my sabbatical when I was working as a professor in the graduate program at San Jose State then. Mm-hmm. And this is where we were able to... then Lois and I did a nationwide speaking tour.
So did you make your connection there? We have to take a quick break, but I'm trying to pick up where you made your connection with the Oma Tepe.
When we agreed that we would try a sister city ship in Hinu Tepe, which was recommended by my planner friend in Nicaragua. Uh-huh. And that's when we started our sister city relationship with Hinu Tepe.
And where did you get your coffee? When did that come in?
Well, that came...
That came later.
That came later?
When we went down and had to justify a sister city relationship with a Nicaraguan city by our own sister city committee, which Lois and I did.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. We're talking about building relationships with food. This is... a little bit of fun. We're having talking coffee with you and the Muleys and the folks up in Bainbridge Island. Right back. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking coffee, but more than coffee. We're talking about how food can be used to build bridges between people and bring people together in situations where politics fail. And one place where politics certainly failed was in Nicaragua. And we're talking with people who transcended the political mess that developed between our nations and went down there and started developing a sister city relationship. And they used coffee to build bridges between our two worlds, specifically between Bainbridge Island up in Washington and Oma Tepe Island in Nicaragua, and how that particular bridge led to the building of other bridges between Nicaragua and perhaps all over the place now. We have bridges going from Santa Cruz to Nicaragua. We have bridges going from Nicaragua to Vashon Island up in Washington and Canada. How many bridges do we have going here, Dina?
I couldn't give you an accurate count, but...
a wild guess.
It's been a real network of connections. Just to give you an idea of how widely it swung, we had a swing dance delegation a few years ago where basically a dance exchange between a bunch of young people from here who taught swing dance to their Nicaraguan counterparts, and they in turn were taught Nicaraguan folkloric dancing.
So I guess I want to talk about, we know what comes across the bridge from Nicaragua to here. What goes back to Nicaragua from here?
Well, initially, when we started making money from coffee sales, the number one place that we invested it was in water systems on Oma Tepe. There were a number of towns, including the area where the coffee is grown, that had no really satisfactory potable water source. That is to say, most of the water that people drank came from the lake. And
wow.
Because the lake was also where the cattle drank, among other things, it was not water that you really wanted to drink. And a lot of women had terrible back pains from carrying water up the hill to their villages and farms.
Bert, you just seem to resonate with that.
Oh, yes. It just had to do with my project in El Mamanel in between Muimui and Montaguas in Nicaragua, where... I formed a brigade to go down of 21 people from Santa Cruz area, and we built a school, a water system, and one of our persons from here was an expert in dam building, and I even helped to take the pipeline 2 kilometers up a mountain. I was associated with a group called APSNICA, Architects and Planners in Support mm-hmm. in Nicaragua.
So you guys are working on basic infrastructure, right?
Yeah.
You're building the first
things
first.
But we also allowed the people to say, where would you like your houses built?
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be up on the mesa. It was right in the war zone. They did not want to be down where the Contra would lobby shells into their village. That was accomplished. We spent 6 weeks there, a part of a three brigade a year-round issue where we built 23 houses, a school, and the water system. But as Dana was talking about the water, it was an empowerment project to this extent. The government only supplied the roof, and we supplied the mortar. They demanded that they have a wainscoting in each building that would stop a bullet. At nights we were in the war zone, and we saw streamers of what sure. were in the area.
So I guess that's what you go for first, right, Dana? You go for the real basic things that you need to have a community, like water, like latrines, and things like that.
Yeah, we had medical delegations, like
medical
one
delegations.
I mentioned earlier. Sorry.
What about the cultural things that come later? And one of the things that you just talked about, the swing dance delegation. I find that particularly fascinating. What a way to bring people together. Dance, right?
Uh-huh.
Or surfing.
Very good. And I guess that's what I wanted to talk about is one of the stories I heard about is the high school students going down to Nicaragua on a spring break, which is, not exactly the tradition of high school students. When you go on spring break, you want to go to some place where you can, drink a lot of beer and get in a lot of trouble. But, the whole notion of high school students going down to Nicaragua, what do they learn in that kind of culture that they can bring back across the bridge?
Well, I think they've learned a lot, but most importantly, I think it's given them a very different perspective on what's important in life. They find most of these kids have stayed in homes with dirt floors and chicken pigs wandering through from time to time. It's a very different life than they live here on Bainbridge. But what they find is that people are at least as happy in those communities as they are here. And so they ask themselves, what's going on here? They realize that having big supermarkets and malls and all that stuff isn't really as important as they might have thought it as they were growing up. And they focus on close family relationships. Most of these kids who've lived for a week and a half with a Nicaraguan family, that's their Nicaraguan family. And those relationships are maintained through letters, emails, if that's available, phone calls for years and years.
I want to point out that we have been responsible with Three Americas of sending more than 14 or 15 students from UCSC in life-changing experiences.
What do they bring back?
And what do they bring back? They bring back a new avenue for relating to their fellow human being.
Hey, that's a big
community.
Thing to bring back from...
And they bring it back, and we're doing it now with surfers between Pie de Gigante.
Right back. Quick break. Welcome back, folks. We have a few minutes to go and 10 million miles to travel. Talking about building bridges with food, bringing people together using food in ways that perhaps the government can't. And so that's the question that I really want to lay on the table today. Can we use food to build bridges between people in ways that the government simply can't? And I'm going to lay that on the table for Lois Muley to start.
Well, this is a very interesting subject for us because our organization is a catalyst to other organizations, and we network in that way.
There's bridges all over the place.
Bridges all over the place. And our board members that we put together primarily to form the corporation in the first place consists of people who have interests all over the Western Hemisphere. So starting with a recent project... With the Chilean person who is Mapuche, a member of the Mapuche indigenous people mm-hmm. in the southern part of the continent. We helped to put together a community center uh, following the tsunami, which just happened.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And we helped them to provide a way to get the money down there. And the communities, there are five community centers, and we took responsibility for one of them. Another thing was in Haiti, because one of our board members was very interested in Haiti.
So you were doing this.
So we were doing this and raised over $7,000, was it, for Haiti through various means.
Katrina.
The income from the coffee booth and the income also from donations and from matching funds from other corporations.
Do you see a problem in this, too, in using food?
And using food?
Yes.
Everybody in the farmer's market.
You're asking a very leading question there.
Yes, I am.
No, but because there are different ways of growing food, one of which Monsanto has been very active in with the genetically engineered crops. And this is a more controlling situation, which will eventually possibly wipe out the native crops, and it becomes
The interesting thing about that is in Canada, the genetically engineered canola seeds have been used to, in essence, make farmers who own their own land serfs on their own land, because those seeds are owned by Monsanto. And Monsanto, when farmers plant those seeds...
This is a story all in itself, but it's not our story.
Not our story, okay.
We don't do it that way.
Okay, good for you. Okay, Dana, what do you think? Can we use food to build bridges?
Oh, absolutely. I think the bridges that we build have been greatly strengthened by the coffee relationship, both because it supports coffee growers and because it supports projects that help their whole community.
And in that helping, everybody seems to be helped in this equation. Is that not true?
It's certainly true that people on our island have benefited from the relationship. It's by no means a one-way thing.
Well, it seems as though this relationship that between Ometepe Island and Bainbridge Island has developed into a situation where it's almost like Bainbridge Island and Ometepe Island have really become sisters.
Well, I feel that's very true. The relationships between individuals and various groups on the two islands have become very strong. We have sister schools that are communicating all the time.
And here's the most fascinating thing of all, Dana. There is no government standing between you and Ometepe, is there?
No, and I think it was very wise of the founders of this relationship to stay out of the political realm.
There you go. We have to leave now, but thank you so much, Dana, for joining us. Boy, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it. Bert and Lois Muley, Three Americas, Inc., Dana Quitsland, Bainbridge, Ometepe, Sister Island. Join us on the forums at metrofarm.com. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio. Thank you all so much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.